It's remarkable to me how often I'm surprised and inspired by what I hear on my public radio station. My next guest has both inspired and surprised me. She's better known as an actor than a traveler. You may recognize her as a former Bond girl, for her recent role in The Wolf of Wall Street, or for playing party girl Patsy Stone on the Britcom Absolutely Fabulous. But you're probably less familiar with Joanna Lumley in her role as a champion of the civil rights of the Gurkha people of Nepal. Joanna, I understand you've been a world traveler now for quite some time.
I think I was practically born in a suitcase. I was born in Kashmir the year before India gained her independence. And from then, I travelled back and I travelled out to Hong Kong where I lived for a few years and travelled back, then travelled out to Malaysia where we lived for a bit because my father was with the British Army, which is the Indian Army, the British Army in India, and his regiment was the Gurkha Regiment.
What is it about the Gurkhas? Who are they, first of all?
The Gurkhas are the hillmen of Nepal. And 200 years ago, there was a huge skirmish with the Gurkha, the Nepalese, as they were, fighting the British. And they respected each other so much that the Gurkhas, at the end of the battle, when there were sort of corpses lying all over the place, the leaders of the Nepali army came up to the British and said, "We like the way you fight. Can we fight for you?" And that was it. That was the beginning of this extraordinary marriage. They're not part of the Commonwealth. It's their voluntary service every year. That's what they want to do. And they join up, and it's the finest job you can have in Nepal is to belong to become a British Gurkha. And my father was an officer with the Gurkhas, yeah.
Fearless warriors. Isn't there a famous saying, if a man says he's not afraid of dying, he's either lying or he's a Gurkha?
That's absolutely true.
You want them on your side if you're in a war.
You do, and they are so frightening that their reputation goes ahead of them like a kind of bow wave, and people go, "Oh no, the Gurkhas are coming," quite often just resign and put their hands up in the air.
Joanna, by the Gurkhas, you're considered a daughter of Nepal and literally a national treasure. They've got some struggles, and you empathize with that, and you've helped them. What are their struggles, and how have you been involved?
The struggles were, by some extraordinary anomaly of British law, although a lot of Commonwealth troops, and I'm sure that your listeners understand what that means, which is this great link-up of old countries which used to be in the British Empire, and the Empire's long gone, but a lot of those countries have remained friends with Britain. But the Gurkhas are not part of the Commonwealth, and they had a completely different deal. So when they had finished their service, they were booted out of the country, whereas other Commonwealth soldiers were allowed to, they had the right to remain or become British or stay there or work in Britain. And it just seemed wrong that the Gurkhas were being treated differently. So a very small group of us decided to take up the cause, took it to the High Court, fought, and gradually got the country on our side, got the press on our side, got Parliament on our side, and got the laws changed.
Wow.
So the Gurkhas are now treated the same, yeah.
Good for you.
And every year we have our Remembrance Day is on November the 11th at 11 o'clock, and it's the most solemn occasion practically in the calendar, and it's the Queen comes out of the cenotaph to honour all the fallen in both the great wars.
And while England is Christian, the cenotaph is very careful not to have any religious symbol on it because it's
absolutely
a memorial to
right.
all
so
the people who died for the
All faiths are represented there.
Very good.
And all the Commonwealth leaders are there, all of them, and it's a terribly moving ceremony, actually. You suddenly think, you know, it's the old rather sort of 60s hippie thing, Rick, which is, I wish we could all live in peace together, because when we all are making friends, of course we're all different. Of course we've all got different cultures and ideas and practices and standards and histories, but we're all so much the same, you know, if only we could live in peace.
We talked about your father being in the British service. Your grandfather actually had an adventure
My mother's father, indeed.
In Bhutan.
He was a diplomat, and his sort of area where he was, as it were, ambassador to, was Tibet, Sikkim, which in those days was an independent country, not part of India, and Bhutan, which is still an independent country. And the summer months he lived in Tibet, and then it got very, very cold up there on the high plateaus, and he would move down to Gangtok, which is in Sikkim. So my mother was brought up there and rode her ponies up in the high hills.
I read in 1931 he had to travel all the way to Bhutan to give the king a special
honor from King George V. Yeah.
And now that was a long journey back then in 1931.
It was a long journey. My grandmother went with him. My aunt, my mother was at boarding school in England, too young to go. But my aunt went. They took about 100 pack animals. It was a huge diplomatic venture.
3 months through the jungles?
Not through the jungles. This is midwinter, so it was through quite a lot of it was through the snow.
Oh, my goodness.
And Bhutan is like, you know, the highest parts of Bhutan are high, high, high. They've got mountains of 25,000 feet. And the low, low, low parts are you grow oranges. So you have a heck of a difference in height and in climate.
You retraced that, your grandfather's journey, and what, 65 years later, and you filmed it, and you did a documentary film called The Kingdom of the Thunder Dragon. What was that like? And what was your impression
of Bhutan? That's the name for Bhutan. Oh, it was just a blissful place. I think it's changing quickly nowadays. So again, I would say to anybody who wants to travel, travel now, because it's changing. The towns are getting bigger, the hotels are getting chicer, which in many ways is nice, but in many ways it's lovely to see the country as it was. It was a locked-off, hidden kingdom, a vast Himalayan kingdom with great dzongs, which are like fortress monasteries planted about the place, and tiny villages around the outside, but largely completely empty. It's about the size of Switzerland. Mm. It's got valleys which grow all the medicinal herbs. You can cure yourself from the herbs that you'd pick in the valleys of Bhutan. It's mysterious and friendly and lovely.
To this day, I think tourism is quite controlled there, so it's limited who gets in there and so on, but it's opening up
That's
to tourism.
True.
And you had, with your family connections, it's amazing, you had dinner with, what, the former queen mother of Bhutan?
Yes. Isn't
now,
that
she had a connection with your grandfather, or her family
That's
did,
right.
And they actually, you come back two generations later. What was that like?
Just phenomenal. I was so proud, and the warm friendliness they had, because my grandfather was instrumental in keeping Bhutan a separate sovereign nation rather than being annexed into Britain, mm-hmm. because he was advising wherever he went, he would say, I think this would work, this wouldn't. And he said, I think it would be sensible to keep Bhutan separate and independent. And they've always been grateful to him for that. But of course, he adored, he was a very great linguist. He had 12 or 13 languages. The Bhutanese royal family, oh, it's tremendously complex out there, but some of them were Tibetans. And of course, he knew Tibetans. He was a friend of the 13th Dalai Lama.
Wow.
And so all these extraordinary stories from a kind of another world, another world.
Did they show off? Did you sit and watch athletic competitions or?
Well, we didn't. They didn't do it for us, but we came in on one of their big ceremonies, which was like a four-day fair of feasting and people gathering together and religious dances where they wear beautiful masks, animal masks, rather sort of weird, almost hellish, most of them snarling. And these are supposed to be the faces of demons and gods in the underworld, the other world. And the old people looking at it, I could see in their faces they truly believed. They were memorizing these extraordinary dancing figures so that when they passed through into the next life that they had recognized them. It was terribly moving and thrilling. They couldn't have treated us more kindly and courteously. I think that honestly, wherever you are in the world, if you have a good sense of humor and are modest and courteous and bother to learn a few words, just thank you, please, good evening, in their language, even if you struggle, they know you're trying, you know? You can make friends so fast.
The best part of my week is making new friends from all around the world and sharing them with you on Travel with Rick Steves. You know how important it is for listener support to keep all the quality programming you enjoy on this great station coming to you day after day, year after year. If you've already done your part to support public radio, thank you. And if you haven't made your contribution yet, we'd sure appreciate hearing from you right now. And hey, if you can add just a little extra for those who can't afford to contribute this time around, that really helps too. When I support my public radio station at any level, I know I'm picking up the slack for people who can't or don't do their share. And I like that. It feels good to do more than my share in supporting something as important as non-commercial media. Again, this is not a charity. It's a service. I'm consuming it because I like it. I value it. If you feel that way too, give us a ring or go online right now to make your secure contribution to this station. Thanks again for being such an important part of this community service we call Public Radio.